There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hi all, welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, which is our daily podcast that brings together the very best bits of today's show. Today being Thursday, March the 19th.
I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need.
We have been looking at the fine art of budgeting this morning, obviously. A lot of people having a look at the bank balance, watching markets go into free fall and then back up again and then back down again and then back up again and then back down again. And it is obviously the sort of time where you do start thinking, gosh, what kind of position am I in? So we've been getting some good advice this morning. Steve Cronin is the founder of DeadSimpleSaving.com. We asked him, where do you start? Where do you start? Got a bit more time on your hands to think about these things. That's never good. Where do you start getting a grip on your finances?
The first thing is with your mindset. We inherit all sorts of crazy psychological beliefs about money from our parents, from our culture, from our early years. You have to address those to make sure you don't have any bad habits, any bad problems with that. The next thing is going to be cash. Like, cash really is king in a in wild times like this. So it's very important to make sure that you haven't got a lot of expensive debt. Anything over 5%, certainly if you're rolling over a credit card balance every month, I'd be very, very careful about that in these times and do whatever you can to pay that off. If you've got cheap debt below 4%, no hurry, just pay whatever you pay every month and that should be okay. But please try to have a cash buffer of 3 to 6 months total expenses as a minimum in these times. Cash will give you so much resilience, and that will really help you get through this, and it will help you sleep at night as well.
We asked Steve as well whether or not we might see a sea change at the end of all of this, of how we looked at money here in the UAE. I mean, we talk a lot about the fact that because we're seeing so much remote working now, when everything goes back to normal, will we continue to see more remote working when people see that it works? In the UK, they're asking whether or not we could see really low percentages of online grocery shopping. The UK's been a bit of a laggard in adopting it in Europe. Whether or not we could see that become a bit more of a norm as well. And one of the things we said to Steve is, if we all watch the dirhams a little bit more, will we change our attitude to things here in the UAE?
Well, it might do, yes, just as a rude shock. Unfortunately, often people have this easy come, easy go mentality when it comes to their money. We all work hard, we're all stressed, we're all away from home. The problem with that then is it results in spending, because there's a bit of a hole in your heart that you're trying to fill, a bit of an emotional void. And I think because now we can't go to brunch, you will realize that there is actually more to life than brunch. And there's friends and family, and spending time and not spending lots of money is much more important. And so, yes, it might actually change people's mindset a little bit.
We've also been looking at the property market this morning. New numbers coming out from Property Finder and the Dubai Land Department show quite an uptick for January-February property transactions. 12% up in January compared to the year before, 33% up rather, in February. 9.4 billion dirhams worth of property changing hands. We've been speaking this morning to Warren Phylliskirk, who's the director of Mortgage Finder, and that is part of the Property Finder group, asking for his take on these numbers.
Well, no, we've seen, obviously, we're on the mortgage side of things. We've seen this similar growth. It's the lower end of the market, the more affordable properties that are seeing strong growth. It's a direct comparison that people are making of whether they choose to buy or to rent. And at that end of the market, there's a compelling reason to do so. That's where we feel that the market is at the moment. Aside from other current events, obviously. But that's where the positives have been this year so far.
Well, look, the current events are everything, aren't they? I mean, January and February, March feels like a completely different month. This week feels like a completely different week to last week. Things are changing so quickly. But we did ask Warren what COVID-19 effect, what coronavirus effect he was seeing on the property market.
Well, we're still seeing people continuing with the pre-approval processes, and there's people in the middle of transactions that contractually are in, so they have no decision to turn back around. But we're seeing the banks move on their products in very positive ways, which is very encouraging. So I think people who are securing pre-approvals now will sit and wait. Obviously, we're all in that same situation. Everyone's going to be in a hiatus for a short period, hopefully a short period, we hope. But in the long term, once we're out of this current uncertain period, it's a very strong position in terms of the prices, the interest rates that have been reduced. Now we're seeing the central bank's positive steps to increase loan to values are really a big encouragement for people to buy.
And that is Warren Phyllis-Kirk, Director of Mortgage Finder, part of the Property Finder Group. I mean, there are some good numbers out there. The UAE Central Bank has released some reassuring numbers this morning about the amount of deposits and the financial position of the banks here. Those property transactions from the first 2 months are good. The one that caught me actually this morning was the Dubai economy, effectively, the business registration and licensing arm of it, saying that they had issued around 2,500 new licenses since the beginning of March. 2,500 new licenses, that's not counting renewals. So stuff still happening, but obviously people watching the news and feeling extremely concerned and cautious. Coming out of the UK, the high street, the news in the last 24 hours has not been great. We knew Laura Ashley had gone into receivership, a load of restaurant chains saying that they're struggling as well. The owner of Wagamama, a company called Restaurant Group, has said that it's talking to its landlords for restaurants about a 50% reduction in rent. Debenhams, which was already struggling, is also asking for a five-month rent holiday from landlords.
Just reflecting on that little story that you... Well, I say little story. It's a big story, especially for all those in the Southern Hemisphere with the Qantas Group halting all international flights after the Australian government recently telling citizens to avoid overseas travel because of the pandemic at the moment. This is just the latest of the airline brands. And we've spoken about it, haven't we, throughout the week. I mean, I heard overnight about Air Canada, the fact that they'd halted a number of their flights, had grounded a number of their planes. Ryanair, with a very bleak outlook, basically saying they don't expect their fleet to be going anywhere within the next 7 days. So they're talking at the moment about grounding every single flight for Ryanair in the coming days. The impact, again, on industries. This is not an industry-specific issue. This is an issue that is having a knock-on effect on every single industry and every single individual out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, midnight tonight in New Zealand, which, let me pull up my app and tell you exactly what time that is for us. It's 6 p.m. there at the moment. They're going to close the borders to anyone who is not a resident or a citizen in the country. That follows a similar decision in Australia for a travel ban as well. And of course, if you're following the ARN News Centre app, and if you want to be continually updated, you should be. We have, of course, the decision announced here in the UAE about whether or not you will be able to come in if you are out of the country. Do download the app because it's a very, very good source for breaking news, particularly UAE and GCC specific news.
If we need one little bit of positive news to come out of a lot of worrying news, to put it mildly, is the fact that China reporting this morning no new local infections. Now, it's been a long run for them, and I know a number of, you know, fairly draconian, fairly long-ranging controls have been put into place over there. But, and can everyone please touch wood here at the moment, it seems that the numbers are going the right way for China at the moment. This is the first morning they've been able to report no new local infections. So we will obviously, not just we, the world will keep an eye on those numbers in the coming days.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are indeed crossing now to Singapore to speak to an old friend of the Business Breakfast, someone that Rich Malcolm and myself have been interviewing for the past 15 years. Steve Bryce is Chief Investment Strategist at Standard Chartered. We're speaking to him this morning because he and I are also friends on Facebook, and he wrote a post last night that really touched me, speaking about looking at the pandemic as both, well, the chief investment strategist of a global bank, but also of the father of two boys. Steve, good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. You're making me feel old with the 15 years comment, Brandy.
Me too, Steve. Me too. Look, this post you put on Facebook last night, and we've shared it with listeners this morning, talking about trying to explain the pandemic to your kids, but also looking at what really matters as someone who, I mean, let's get, you earn a living advising banks and their customers on investment strategy. What prompted you to write it?
I think it was more just in terms of the kids are obviously, you know, they're growing up, they're sort of young teenagers, and trying to, they're breaking up from school early yesterday, so they're meant to be going back. So then they were talking about what they were going to do with their friends. And you're like going, well, why don't you just pick two or three friends and hang out with them rather than going around with all your friends from the condo, and then risk of, you know, spreading from people to people, which would probably be worse than being in school itself. So it's really just trying to get them to understand that we've never seen something like this before. We've either seen something that's highly contagious, swine flu, for instance, but was low mortality, or something that actually had quite a high mortality, but wasn't in hindsight that contagious in terms of SARS. This is obviously in the middle on both metrics. And so we've never seen something like this. So they shouldn't be treating it as being blasé. They should be actually taking it relatively seriously. Even if the central scenario that we all have is that this too shall pass quite quickly. But we should be doing everything in our power to help that happen at the global level.
And that, of course, is the health advice, the social distancing advice that's being given, you know, very strongly here in the UAE. But with your professional hat on, you talk about the fact that the value of your portfolio matters less than the health of your family. Absolutely. But you also say, as an investor, you expect to see a relatively rapid recovery. What do we need to keep in mind market-wise at the moment?
Well, I think obviously first and foremost is, you know, the people that have been really hit during this phase have been those that have significant leverage in their portfolio. So we've always been talking for a long time now. The thing you need to avoid as an investor is being a forced seller. And two things can force you to sell. One is your own emotional reaction to things, and therefore you need to manage your risk profile. But the second thing can be a financial need to sell. So you start getting margin calls and things like that. And certainly we've seen quite a bit of that happening in recent times. And that is something that leads to valuations becoming, you know, from swimming from quite a positive valuation to quite a distressed valuation in some circumstances. So I think that's at the personal level what you need to keep an eye on. In terms of financial markets, you know, the outlook, clearly the COVID cases globally, but particularly in Europe and the US, are pretty important at this stage, I feel, because we've obviously seen an acceleration. I think yesterday Europe went above the total cases recorded in China. I think there's some positive signs there. I think Italy is the second derivative looks like it's negative, i.e. the cases are still going up, but they're going up at a decelerating pace. So that's, you know, it's certainly not being factored into market pricing today. But if that were to continue into next week, then that might give hope for other countries who are earlier in the stage, but will ultimately get there and that this thing will come under control. But for now, markets are likely to remain volatile.
What are you telling your clients?
To be honest, it's really just trying to be a little bit more reassuring. We're talking about, you know, how markets have formed historically, you know, so comparing this to different, you know, periods of weakness. And one thing there is this, I mean, this goes back to this is unprecedented. I mean, the peak to bear market, it's the fastest in history. It's faster even than the Great Depression, right? So this has really come and blindsided people from left field. You know, obviously there's a lot of uncertainty out there, but actually we're starting to see quite a few assets at distressed levels. So for instance, if you look at US energy high yield issuers, spreads are now the highest they've ever been, even including the global financial crisis. Energy stocks are down, you know, obviously extremely sharply in recent times and cumulatively over the past few years. So there's some signs that, you know, we are getting to distress levels. And therefore, for those that have money on the sidelines, you know, starting to drip in today is probably not a bad thing to do. You know, I wouldn't necessarily, if you had $100 to invest, I wouldn't necessarily invest all 100 today. But, you know, certainly start dripping that into the market. And if we see further weakness, then continue to do so to take, you know, take this as an opportunity, as well as obviously the challenge that we're all facing.
What about for those who are already invested in the market?
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, there's no need to sell, in which case we'd largely be, you know, looking to hold. There is a temptation at this stage to sort of go risk off and invest in less risky assets, such as, you know, high quality investment grade bonds, whether it be corporate bonds or whether it be, you know, government bonds. But obviously, you know, there's two risks there. One is if yields spike higher all of a sudden, then that will damage you. But also you then have the risk of missing out on the recovery in equity markets when it actually happens. So from our perspective, we're saying, look, you know, if that's where you are, if you're fully invested, then it's probably better not to look at your daily valuation valuations and just sit through this time.
Just a quick one from me, Steve, in terms of compare and contrast, not so much from a professional point of view, but I think a lot of people looking to Singapore from Dubai at the moment as a comparative situation in terms of how the city-state is dealing with the virus outbreak. How are things on the ground over in Singapore?
They're clearly a little edgier this week. So obviously we've had a pickup in infections. So it had been dropping to single digits, low single digits, and occasionally zero for a while. Obviously it's picked up a little bit in recent times. So people are a little bit edgier. I think what the authorities have done very well, and we get daily emails, you know, internally in the bank, and also get emails from school on a regular update basis. There's a lot of transparency about what's actually going on, where the cases are, how they're related to previous cases, et cetera. And I think that transparency is really helping people just remain calm. Obviously, you know, being cautious, but not excessively afraid. And from that perspective, I think that's really helping the country get through this very difficult time.
Steve Bryce, Chief Investment Strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank. Lovely to speak to you again this morning. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Randy.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
My newsmaker this morning is someone who's up far too early and bash yourself.
Oh dear, the list will be very long then. The Dalai Lama.
He's on leave.
The Dalai Lama.
Rich,
oh, it's the Dalai. Oh.
What are you doing? What are you doing? You're on leave. Are you sleeping in? Are you making yourself some pancakes? Are you sorting out some hot chocolate for the boys? No, no, you're up listening to the Business Breakfast and thinking, how could I add to and improve that show this morning? Richard has been in touch with us. Richard has his own newsmaker.
Yeah, newsmaker this morning is Katy Perry, the pop star. She has been in court in the United States and she has won. Here's the deal. It's all to do with the lawsuits over one of her songs, the 2014 song Dark Horse, which was the second biggest selling song worldwide in 2014. Katy was at the peak of her powers. But a Christian rapper, and yes, that is a thing, in the United States called Marcus Gray, a.k.a. Flame, that's his stage name, said, that song sounds very similar to one that I released a while ago, back in 2008, called Joyful Noise. Now, this lawsuit's been going on for years and years and years and years, but Marcus Gray won last year in court, and he won $2.8 million in damages. Okay, Katie has won an appeal against that, so the court case rumbles on. Have a listen to the music and you can decide. You can be the kangaroo court. First up, number one, this is Katy Perry's song, Dark Horse. Here you are, you're gonna come to me. And here you are, but you better choose carefully. Cause I'm capable of anything. Okay, that was Katy Perry, Dark Horse. This is Marcus Gray with his 2008 song, Joyful Noise.
You know what it is?
And this, if you can't quite make up your mind, is a mashup of the two next to each other. You're gonna come to me.
You know what it is.
So, what do you think? For my money, I'm with the Christian rapper Marcus Gray. I think the Katy Perry song, and I love Katy Perry, saw her at the Dubai Air Show a few years ago, but I think it is very, very similar to Marcus Gray's song, Joyful Noise. During the trial, Katy Perry's lawyer argued that Gray and his team were trying to own the basic building blocks of music, the alphabet of music that should be available to everyone. And the judge agreed that this was just a basic melody that could not be copyrighted by Marcus Gray or indeed anybody else. Of course, that was the appeal. Marcus Gray has said he is going to appeal the appeal. And that's why Katy Perry today is my newsmaker.
Someone's got too much time on his hands.
I think the old fitness regime's gone out the window, hasn't it?
clearly it has. Look, Rich isn't with us. He's off at the moment. That's why you're hearing Tom every morning. Richard, though, there have been a lot of questions coming in for us saying, is he ill? Is he all right? Is he in quarantine?
After that, we're not sure.
So we have said, Rich, are you all right?
Yeah, I am at home, but I'm not in quarantine. I am doing social distancing, which a lot of people are at the moment. But look, I'm out and about a little bit. I was out cycling yesterday, went up to the Al Qudra cycle track, which is a long way out of town. And it is one of the few things that's still open if you want to go and get a bit of exercise. They've said no big groups. You can't go as a big peloton of 20 pro cyclists. But if it's you and a couple of family members, that's fine. I've been to the supermarket a couple of times. Newsflash, the stocks are full. I loved your interview with Tom from Spinney's a couple of days ago. And yeah, the supermarkets here, I think, are doing a cracking job at making sure that we only have to do responsible shopping. So everything's cool. It feels like I've been away a long time and I've got one more week to go. Spending time with the kids, which is good fun. Missing you guys and see you soon.
Well, if you were worried about Richard Dean's health, worry no longer.
He's just... Can we ask him to do the weather as well, possibly?
Possibly the traffic.
Because
our freelance rates, Rich, are very reasonable.
Apparently we can expect a bit of rain later, so maybe he can give us some insight on that as well. I love that. And good on Rich for embracing
social distancing.
The nature of and the action of social distancing at the moment. And obviously he had some amazing plans in place for him and the family.
He's managed to, in terms of kicking the trifecta out for holiday plans, originally booked in to go to Milan. Spoiler, Richard did not go to Milan.
Yeah.
Then what was it? A cricketing holiday to Sri Lanka with the boys.
Boys' weekend in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, that hit the skids as well. There was something else.
Skiing in Georgia.
Barsha is lovely this time of year.
But so many people's travel plans have been sort of kicked into touch. So kudos to him for making the most of it and taking local leave, and he fully deserves that and everything. He just sort of falls into that trap that so many of my friends are falling into at the moment that are doing similar things and constantly posting about how happy they are, spending time with their family, spending time with their kids. Really, really happy to do this, you know, embracing the whole thing. Not bored.
But I'm up at 6 o'clock and I'm thinking I might just file something for the business breakfast.
And I just think that, yeah, it's impossible not to get bored, isn't it? And that doesn't make you a bad person or anything like that. But in terms of keeping occupied for 14 days and in social distancing or in a completely different routine where you've got more time on your hands, more time to sort of invigorate the old grey matter, it's nigh on impossible for the mind not to wander into elements of... There is it, boredom.
Well, look, There are worse things he could be doing than getting in touch with us. Richard, we are going to expect a package at this time every single morning. And as Tom said, you can take over weather and traffic. That'd be great. Thank you very much. Very quickly, moving from Barsha to Osaka, I am looking at The Economist's annual cost of living survey. I'm looking at this knowing that as they emailed it to me last night, it was probably already not as relevant as it had been when they did the research. And that is the struggle that people have at the moment. But it is interesting from the point of view that currency has very much driven the changes in this survey. This year, we have three cities who are all the most expensive cities to live in, and Paris is not one of them. It used to be. It has fallen. Hong Kong, Singapore, and Osaka are the top three.
So, again, these lists, I take your point as well, where we read these lists and we go, yeah, I get that. And yeah, that was the case probably when these lists were conducted or created. I'm pretty sure they are still the same. That still rings true now.
Well, I'm Will almost, do you know what? I'm almost, well, I say I'm almost sure that it is because currency has driven a lot of why the US cities have gone up the rankings here. New York's gone up to number four. Los Angeles has gone up to number eight. One of the reasons that we saw South Korea fall out of the top 10 was currency depreciation as well. We are seeing a lot of changes in currencies at the moment. The yen seen very much as a safe haven. So that has been climbing as well. Well, it's been swinging, but there's also been some uptick in the yen. So I would imagine that Osaka and Tokyo as well, which came from 13th up to 8th in this survey, are still on the currency front holding pretty strong.
Mm.
But it is one of those things that if you're doing surveys and statistics at the moment,
it's just going to be thrown
tricky,
out, aren't they? Yeah, and that's the thing. If there is a sort of if you are taking those results now and feed them into the system, they are going to be completely different, you know, especially given the sort of uncertainties at the moment. I suppose that's what sort of factor is the factor that is most affecting these figures, because you don't know how long it's going to last.
Look, if I had 10 dirhams for every time I hear or read the word unprecedented, I wouldn't be bothering to watch the markets at the moment, because I'd be fine.
Yeah.
Retirement would be sorted.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming. So in a stage where we don't really know what's going on in the slightest globally, any data, I suppose, is useful data, and you take what you can take from it. But realising that the world in which a lot of these surveys were done, and this, to be fair, isn't a sentiment survey. This is a survey in which people go out and take 400 prices in 160 cities, and they benchmark the actual prices for the cost of living. And we won't necessarily have seen that change rapidly in the last couple of months.
True, yeah.
Can and Coke is still a can of Coke. So there you go, the three most expensive cities in the world. Coming in joint first, Singapore, Hong Kong and Osaka.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Property Pulse, in association with Property Finder. Welcome to my
house. Yeah, we are talking this morning on Property Finder about the numbers coming out from the Dubai Land Department and Property Finder. Statistics, let me run you through them. We saw an uptick of 12%, actually, sales in January 2020 compared to January 2019. February also saw a massive rise in transaction, 33% compared to the year before. Over 4,000 sales transactions for those first 2 months of the year. Now, we are going to try and put that into some kind of perspective. We know that statistics aren't aging well at the moment. A month is a very long time. 24 hours is a very long time here on the Business Breakfast. But we are very pleased to be speaking on the phone to Andrew Cummings, co-founder and managing director of LuxuryProperty.com. Andrew, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Do you want to tell us what kind of year we've had so far, property-wise?
Well, as you were just saying, the start of this year has been fantastic. You know, at a macro level, the figures that you've just laid out are really, really positive for the market, both in a qualitative turn and a quantitative. It's really felt as if the market has been on the turn. There's been so many more buyers that have been much more keen to get on the ladder, with prices having fallen to a more affordable level. And this new crisis is just another challenge that we need to overcome. Ultimately, the solidity of the market recently is a really great step for everybody. So we're hoping that things will just carry on in the same vein.
Are they? What are you seeing?
Well, I think so far in March, we haven't seen any particular drop-off. Indeed, there's been a number of really good transactions. You know, we ourselves have closed one of the highest sale values in Emirates Hills at 69 million dirhams. We've closed another Emirates Hills deal this month. We've signed contracts of over 7 million in Emirates Living, 17 million on the Pearl Jumeirah. So there's still a lot of activity in the market. That said, what we are seeing is, of course, we're seeing cancellations from international clients. A lot of them no longer can come to the country. And I think that that's going to have a particular impact on the off-plan side. As you mentioned, February transactions rose by 33%. And actually, off-plan sales there had surged 76%. So I do believe that there is going to be a bit of an impact on the off-plan side. That said, Dubai is an incredible digital destination. You know, you don't need to be here to buy property. So if you're still an investor that's overseas, you can literally do it over the phone or over the internet. So we're very lucky in that circumstance that we do actually have the technology in place to be able to continue working.
What about for those who are here, and you make a very good point, actually, about the inability for people to come in at the moment. But for those who are here, are they still willing to go out and have a look around with a real estate agent? I mean, I know you can do a lot of this stuff virtually, but if I'm paying 60 million dirhams for a villa, I'd quite like to have a bit of a wander around.
Well, look, I think no one enjoys spending time with real estate agents anyway, so I don't think this virus changes things that much. But what I would say is, you know, we've been instituting work from home this week, but we've also been taking the right type of precautions over recent weeks with sanitization and things like this. When we're doing viewings, we're making sure everything is cleaned. We've got gloves and sanitizer and soap and things like that for all of our agents. We are still seeing viewings taking place. Our viewing numbers haven't actually decreased over the past week. That might change a little bit, of course, moving forward. But I think as long as people are taking sensible precautions, they're staying at least 2 meters away, then I don't really see there being a huge drop-off, because we are going to have people who still want to buy a home, still want to sell their home, because ultimately this isn't a stock or a share which is sort of slightly distant. This is something that people often need. You know, if you want to live somewhere, if you want to have your own home, you know, you need to go and see that villa. So I do see this continuing.
What percentage of your buyers are based here, though? I mean, when we're talking the level of property that you're dealing with, you're called luxuryproperty.com for a reason. Are they people who are already in the UAE, or are they international?
Well, I think for us as a company working predominantly in the luxury end of the market, it is a more challenging outlook. If you are in the sort of the mass market, the under 3 million dirhams, I think the vast majority of clients would be UAE-based or investors. For us, a little bit like with the off-plan market, we do have a higher percentage of international buyers. And for them, this is obviously going to have an impact. Again, that said, where we're looking at clients who are buying properties over 10 million dirhams, these are not buyers that are sort of constantly moving. Many of our clients we're dealing with for months, sometimes even years before they make a purchase. So a delay of a month or two before they come in isn't really a big deal. It's actually no different to normal circumstances where these very busy people often have business things that come up, which means they don't travel anyway. So, yeah, look, I think it's realistic that there will be some impact. But of course, I think we can work quite effectively around it. Just yesterday, actually, I was out at one of the mansions that we list, and I was doing a video there for one of our overseas clients. So there are ways that you can get around this to sort of keep clients engaged.
You probably don't count as an impulse purchase either, I presume. Let's have a look at the lower interest rates at the end of the market that you deal with. Is a lower interest rate a big deal for people? Is a change to the loan-to-value ratio is a big deal for the kind of clients you service?
Absolutely. Both at the top end of the market and the bottom end of the market, it's undoubtedly a very positive impact. Of course, if you're buying a 10 million dirham plus villa, you're unlikely to be a first-time buyer unless you're incredibly lucky. But for the most part, you know, even with a lot of our other clients, you know, they are really focusing on this. We're having people who are going back to the banks, actually speaking to people like Warren from Mortgage Finder to look at the new terms they can get. Equally, from an off-plan side, the developers are starting to take steps. So, you know, developers have been in touch about renegotiating payment plans, about offering better deals to make sure that people are secure. So we're very lucky to live, I think, in a place where there is good thinking in terms of making sure that people have the flexibility to cope with the uncertainty that we have at the moment.
Andrew Cummings, co-founder and managing director of LuxuryProperty.com. Lovely to have you on the Business Breakfast this morning.
Property Pulse, in association with Property Finder, where life moves. There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.